Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this week's episode of Master the Start, presented by GoMahi.com. We missed you last week, but I hope you had a very Merry Christmas. And I hope you have an incredible New Year's coming up here. This is our 15th episode, and we have an amazing show ahead for you. So, without further ado, introducing shooting guard, 6'5", Trent Tucker. Yeah, that was my best impersonation of an announcer. But anyways, this week, we have Trent Tucker on the show. He attended the University of Minnesota from 1978 to 1982, leading them to a Big Ten Conference Championship in his senior year. He was then selected by the New York Knicks with the 6th overall pick of the 1982 NBA Draft. He was one of the earliest three-point specialists. Tucker represented the Knicks in the first ever three-point shootout in 1986, making it to the semifinals before being outpaced by Craig Hodges and eventually the winner, Larry Bird. Tucker would play 9 seasons with the Knicks before joining the San Antonio Spurs in 1991, and after one season with the Spurs, he joined the Chicago Bulls, who won the 1993 NBA championship. He is an NBA legend, but he's so much more than that. Post-NBA, he worked with the Timberwolves. He worked on KFAN. He's a deep thinker. It shocked me right out of the gate. So settle in, subscribe to the podcast, comment on your thoughts about the show, and enjoy this week's episode of Master the Start. See you in 2 seconds. All right, Trent.
Okay.
Thank you for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
We're super excited to have you on.
All right.
Yeah, this is a pretty casual thing. So we'll just hang out. I'm going to ask you some questions that hopefully make you think a little bit, but I'm going to go with the basics first.
Okay.
The very basics.
The warm-up first, right?
Yeah. So let's start with the background about the legendary Trent Tucker. Like, give us the highlight reel so people understand kind of who you are, why you're important, why people love you.
I don't know about important, but, you know, I grew up in Flint, Michigan, and, you know, I had a wonderful family, and I was very fortunate as a young man growing up in a tough inner-city environment, you know, to have a mother and a father in a household. And I think today, if young people are fortunate enough, you know, to have a two-parent household, you know, that is critical for their development. Not to say that, you know, single family households, you know, still can't produce strong kids with great character, you know, but it was essential, you know, to have, you know, a two parent household, and it helped me to become and grow into the young man that I am today, you know, and having, you know, that male figure in the household on a daily basis, you know, was critical for me and my brothers also. Because, you know, he taught us, you know, what it was about to be a man. And when you have that male figure around, I mean, that's so important for young males today.
Oh, I agree with you big time. And we could get on a tangent on that forever, but it's mind-blowing when you compare lifestyles and how people grow up.
Yeah.
People that grow up with a father generally know how to treat women with more respect, understand how to be more ethically and morally focused, and it's just, yeah, it's a game changer.
Yeah, and then I had the good fortunes of, you know, of being recruited by the University of Minnesota to play basketball, to earn a scholarship, you know, and for myself, coming from Flint, Michigan, you know, sports meant the world to me. It gave me an opportunity, you know, to see a different environment. But also it challenged me to grow as a person, to see if I could leave my neighborhood and find a new place to live and make it there. But sports, you know, would teach you so many different life lessons that sometimes that you don't find it in an educational setting. It teaches you how to be unselfish, you know, how to accept others from all different walks of life. It forces you to engage and not to be afraid when you become a part of a team. To me, communication is a major key. And today, I think we've lost some of that communication through social media, Social media is great because it allows us to connect with people that we don't see on a daily basis, you know, from far places. But we also lose something when we lose that face-to-face communication.
All right, let's get into the old MBA. Let's keep going down this path.
You know, playing 4 years of college basketball, playing with some wonderful teammates, having a chance to win a Big Ten championship in 1982. And then I was lucky enough to be drafted by the New York Knicks in 1982. And when you go into a city like New York where, you know, the pressure is great, you have to be good 6 out of 7 days for them to accept you. But it was something that, you know, that I would never change. You know, the journey that I was on was created by so many other people who came before me. And it's never just about you when you are fortunate enough, you know, to live out your dream. You know, so many other valuable parts have to come together. But it's the people who come before you, the people who are in your life at that time, that helps you understand what this journey is all about. You know, when things are not going well, you can turn to them for advice and knowledge, and they can help you get back on track.
Oh, who would have thought that this would be so deep out of the gate, just asking about your background? Okay, so you also won a championship with the Bulls.
Yeah, I won a championship with the Bulls. Now, but the year before that, you know, I was pretty much out of basketball. And I was working out every day at home, hoping that at some point in time I would get that call. And I went to San Antonio for about 25 games in that year between 91 and 92. Before I went to the Bulls in 92 and 93. And during that summer after the 92 season, you know, things were a little shaky because there were no calls coming in. But I continued to work out every day. I told myself, I said, you know, just stay the course, you know, continue to stay in shape, prepare yourself if that call is going to come tomorrow. And as you get into, you know, midsummer, late summer, almost early fall, and no one has called, you begin to think that, you know, this could be it. You know, the ride is over. I've had a wonderful opportunity, but maybe, you know, my time has come for me now to get off the train. But I kept working out. I just kept working out and kept working out. And all of a sudden, after a long day of working out, I got a phone call from the Chicago Bulls. And it was Jerry Krause. And he said that we would like to bring you in to training camp, but we're going to offer you a non-guaranteed contract. And I said, well, it's fine for me. He said, you sure? Now, he said, you've been guaranteed your entire career. He said, but this is a make good. I said, Jerry, you know, after about 8-9 months with nowhere to go, I said, this is the only option that I have. And I said, but also I have a chance to prove to myself that I can play with the best team in basketball. I said, if you're willing to give me a fair chance to make the team, the role that you're asking me to play, I know I can play that role very well. I've kept myself in good shape. And all the thing I'm looking for is an opportunity. And here's an opportunity today. If I'm not good enough, I can live with that. But you're disappointed. But if you're not prepared, that's when it's hard. That's when it's hard to deal with. And the message that I have for young people today is that you have no idea when an opportunity is coming. Just stay as prepared as you can. You know, continue, you know, to stay on that road and just hoping that at some point in time, your luck is going to change. And over a period of time, my luck changed and I was able to go and play with the best team in basketball and perhaps with the greatest basketball player in the history of the game. And then 9 months later, I was an NBA champion.
I think this might be a good transition because you just kind of brought it up. And I feel like some people fail to realize, in a sense, how much effort you, any other NBA superstar, people that are at the top of their games, how much effort, how much you have to put into getting to that point. So I have to say, you've been around a lot of people, like, as you said, the most successful people in basketball, mm-hmm. most successful broadcasters. How much personally, how much effort did you have to put in, not only when you were in the NBA, but like when you were a kid? What were the things you were giving up on a daily basis to really bring yourself to that level?
Well, I had to play every day. You know, it was morning, noon, and night. And there are things that you have to sacrifice. Sometimes you sacrifice friendships. You sacrifice some of the fun things that kids are doing. It's because you got to make a decision. You know, do I go to a party? Do I go hang out with my friends all day? Or do I go to the gym and work on my game? Do I find a game somewhere to play? Do I find older kids to play against to test my skills? So there is a lot of sacrificing, you know, that has to take place for you just to have a chance to achieve certain levels of athletics. There's no guarantee that you want to make it with all the sacrifices and all the hard work that you put in, because the competition is so fierce. But there's only so many spots available. And you're just hoping that you have enough talent and that you put, you know, enough work in, so when those opportunities do come, you're able to fill on those spots.
It seems super tough. So when you say you were playing like morning, afternoon, night, how many hours do you think you were putting into basketball a day?
As many as I can. You take, you know, when school was out for the summer, you know, I would wake up 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, go play basketball somewhere in an open gym. Then I would go play baseball, little league baseball with my team, finish that game, maybe run home, try to get something to eat. Because my mother was a stay-at-home mom, so, you know, that was a huge plus for me, because when I got home, she could have some food ready for me. And then I'll be off on my bike, you know, back to playing basketball somewhere in open gym once again. Then you leave there and go to another place where there was open gym to play basketball. And then you probably go home and have dinner. And then you would go to the rec center and play from 5 to 7. Then you'll find another place to play from 7 to 9. And then we would go to the park at night because the lights were on. And we would be there until 1, 2 in the morning. And at the time, my father he would wonder where I would be, you know, at 1 or 2 in the morning. I said, I'm at the park playing basketball. And, you know, he sort of believed me, you know, but, you know, you got kids in the inner city, they might be doing some things they shouldn't be doing. But one night I saw him pull up a couple blocks away just to check to see, you know, if I was telling him the truth. And I saw him drive off, and he never came again, because, you know, I was driven. You know, as a young person, I was self-motivated. By having three older brothers, I was almost like an only child. And at that time, you didn't have AAU basketball. You didn't have coaches knocking on your door every single day to say, go to practice here or there. If you really wanted to change, you know, some of the things that were in front of you, you had to be motivated enough by yourself to make it happen. And my parents, you know, they gave me a great opportunity, but they had no idea the journey that I was on, because no one in my family had ever taken, you know, that type of journey. So it was up to me to figure out, you know, from other people who had traveled this road, what it was going to take to make it.
I think that's really interesting in the sense that I'm kind of curious about, you know, I think self-awareness is so important. So when I was in high school, I knew very quickly I wasn't going to the NBA. Mm-hmm. Like, I had that understanding, but I was self-aware enough that I'm going to go into business. I must practice that.
Right.
When did you actually become self-aware that the NBA could be a legitimate possibility? And did it happen really early in your life? Was it in college?
When I was in junior high school as an eighth grader, back in Flint, Michigan at that time, you know, we had 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. Seventh, eighth, and ninth grade. We didn't have, you know, 4 classes in high school. So the high school started at grade 10. As a ninth grader, I was able to play against some of the high school players, and I was able to hold my own. And Flint has always had some very good basketball players. They had strong high school teams. They were supported well by the community. And the high school that I was going to go to after my ninth grade year in junior high school, they had gone to the state championship the year before. And they had four of the top five players coming back who were starters on that team. And I used to play against those guys every day in the summer. And I felt like that if I could compete with them as a 13 or 14-year-old kid, you know, one day I just may have a chance to earn a scholarship to go play college basketball. I felt like that I would be on the junior varsity in my 10th grade year. But then the varsity coach came down to our first practice, and he told the JV coach that he was going to move me up to the varsity level. But this was a big step, because many kids at that time, as a sophomore, could not play varsity basketball because the teams were too good. After about three or four practices, I started to gain my confidence. I felt like that I belonged. And then after about three or four games during the regular season, you know, the coach put me in a critical moment in the fourth quarter. I was able to make a few plays and a few baskets here or there against a team from Detroit, in Detroit, which is about 60 miles, you know, south of Flint. Very tough environment, very good team. And we came back and won that basketball game. And then the next night, he decided to put me in the starting lineup. And I never came out. And from that point on, I knew that I had a chance. But I knew that I had to put the work in. And I had to surround myself with people who thought like I did. And that meant that I had to search and find people who had taken this role before, and to figure out all the things that they were able to do to find some success in this area.
So how did you search for those people? / who did you find?
Well, I found people who had come before me. You know, I found people who were successful in the city of Flint and some of the different things that they did outside of athletics. You know, and to see some of the things that they were able to do on a daily basis, to kind of pick their brain to see what kind of thought process they had along the way. And I knew that if I could just pick up a few things here or there from multiple people, you know, that could help shape the road that I was trying to travel.
I think it's fascinating that you said that you really picked the brains of people that weren't even playing basketball.
Right.
So are we talking individuals that were businessmen? Yeah. Were, that's really cool. What habits did you pick up from them that you think really applied to your career?
Discipline, being a student of the game. You know, athletics to me is very educational. It's because there are a lot of things that you have to, you know, to understand and learn to be a part of a team. When plays are called out, you have to study the playbook so that you can execute along with your teammates. The game is moving so fast, you know, with 50 seconds left in the game, no timeouts, and the coach calls a play. You know, you have to be able to take the information that you hear from him and apply it to what you're supposed to do in a short period of time so that everybody can function as one. To me, that's a huge educational piece. So you spend multiple hours, you know, day in and day out, you know, running these plays to make sure that you understand exactly what you're supposed to do. But not only learning your position is a critical part. Is also learning the positions and the functions of the other four people that you're playing with at that time as well. Knowing where they're supposed to be. They take away option one, what's option two? They take away option two, what's option three? So a lot of times you have to be able to read and react. And the only way that you can execute during that time is because you've done your homework before.
This will be a good transition to this next question then. I'm really fascinated with what is the major difference you see between a high-level high school player, a high-level college player, and a high-level NBA player? I mean, I get that their skill sets maybe are a bit different, you know, one's a lot better than the other, but what are their personas like? Like, what's the big difference as individuals' work ethics as a man, really, and how they conduct themselves?
It's... For one, from high school to college, it's a talent level. You know, you have to have a certain amount of talent to go from one level to the next. And then the talent level is there, and then it's the understanding of the game. The educational piece comes into play now. Because everyone is pretty much at a certain level, physically is pretty much on the same page. You know, it's the guys now, you know, that can think the game through in critical moments that's going to make a difference. That's going to allow you to go from one level to the next. And it's the professionalism. And how do you balance, you know, what life has to offer at certain levels? You go from high school to college. Like I came to the University of Minnesota, it's a whole new world. You have 50,000 students. Things are moving fast. No one is holding your hand. No one is going to tell you it's time to get up to go to class. So you have to figure out what your schedule is going to look like. And now, and say I have to carve out a plan how I'm going to navigate through a whole new system that is brand new and figure out where I fit in at. I know basketball is important, but also now there's something else that's important that's going to keep me on the basketball court. If I don't do what I'm supposed to do in the classroom, basketball goes away. So that's the next level of growth and professionalism, you know, that you learn as a collegiate athlete. And then if you're lucky enough to go on from college to play in the NBA or the National Football League or Major League Baseball, that's a whole other world. Now you're dealing with finances, and now you're dealing with playing against the best of the best. There's travel involved that you have never dealt with before. Now you have to personalize your own life. You have to figure out what it is to really be a man now. And who do I trust along the way? Because there's so many different people who are now a part of what I'm trying to do. I got agents, business people. Someone is telling me, I can help you do this and help you do that. But you don't have any family members who have gone through this journey that you can go back to and say, how do you help me navigate this situation? What information and knowledge can you pass on to me at this time to help me figure out where I need to go and who I need to trust? And they look at you and say, sorry, I can't help you. So then you have to rely on people that you believe who have done things the right way and see if you can sit down and have a conversation with them and look at the role and the things they have done during their time. And then try to, you know, pick from there to put your whole portfolio together as you move forward.
Say that you're all pretty much on the same skill level, in a sense, once you get to higher levels of professional sports.
Yeah, you have some guys who are a little bit better here or there.
Of course, yeah. Of course. And you played with Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. So what was the difference maker? Like, is it the way that he thought through the game? Was it, I mean...
Talent.
It was big part talent.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he has something extra. You know, he was just a little bit better than everybody else. You know, and before I encountered Michael Jordan as a professional basketball player, I thought Magic Johnson was the greatest basketball player I'd ever seen. I grew up with Magic Johnson. And to see a 6'9 guy who could handle the ball and do the things that he was doing was incredible. I mean, it was humanly impossible for somebody to have that type of skill set at that size and to do the things that he could do with the ball in terms of passing and his vision and how he thought the game and made his teammates better. To me, there was nobody better until I saw number 23. And I said, this is a different guy. There's something here that is different. I've always said that if you're lucky enough to play long enough, you're lucky enough to go from one level to the next. And if you get to the ultimate level, the best player is going to show up. And number 23 showed up. He showed up.
How do you stay grounded and humble? You seem like a super humble guy from the 20 minutes I have met you. But how do you do that when you're really sitting at what society deems the top of the world? Everyone wants a piece of you. You're glorified every single night. How do you stay grounded?
I think it came from my childhood days of growing up, you know, with a mother and a father. You know, they worked hard every day. You know, they did the best they could do to prepare to take care of their family. And knowing that hard work allowed me to get to where I got to, but also understanding that at any moment, it could be over. Bad break here or there, bad season, an unfortunate injury, and now I got to figure out something else to do. I was one of the lucky ones as an athlete to have a chance to make a living playing pro sports. It's very rare that someone has a chance to do that. You take 97% of high school kids as seniors who play sports. That's their last game. That's their last game. 3% of that is going to maybe go on to play some level of collegiate sports. Less than 1% of that is going to go on to make a living. And that's the reality that we're facing. There are so many kids who are dying to be a professional athlete. I've always said that they have a much greater chance of becoming Bill Gates than they do Kevin Garnett. And I asked a kid one day, I said, you know who Bill Gates is? Or Warren Buffett? And the guy said, I have no idea who they are. I said, but you know Kevin Garnett. He said, oh, for sure I know who Kevin Garnett is. I said, Warren Buffett and Bill Gates could buy every team in the NBA and still not flinch. And the guy's like, really? I said, you used to see that computer that you're on right now? I said, that's Bill Gates.
Well, then I think this is a good transition then, because, you know, I'm sure you probably hear it being in the industry, but all of us commoners that are talking about sports, you always hear certain people going, you know, professional athletes make way too much money. Just straight up, they make too much money. And it's hard for me to process that as someone in business, because I think to myself, no, they are the best of the best.
Right.
Like, they deserve every penny they get. Mm-hmm. Supply and demand. What do you think of that statement?
Well, I'm with you on that. It's supply and demand. I said professional sports creates a lot of money to certain communities. And these are the best of the best. There's only so many people will ever have a chance, you know, to wear a uniform at that level. And the NBA is a multi-billion dollar industry. And their players are paid according to what they are able to achieve, you know, during that time. I said, but TV rights, the price for TV rights are skyrocketing. The owners are not hurting. So when you say players are overpaid, I'm with you. I disagree with that.
People forget, I believe, that the NBA and the NFL, MLB, it's a big company.
It's a major company.
You guys are very talented employees.
And the run is not long. You make one or two bad mistakes financially as an athlete, you never recover. A guy can fail in business multiple times, but he can go back and recover. I have a lifespan. You know, now the lifespan may have expanded to 19, maybe to 35 or 36, because the game is different. It's not as physically taxing, as physically taxing as it used to be. You know, but players now can play a little bit longer. They have better nutrition. They have more trainers. They have people who can take care of them in terms of longevity. You know, but you still only have a short window to be in this field. And when that time is over, some guys will go on to achieve, you know, different levels of success. But for the majority of the players, you know, this is their last run. And they're trying to figure out what to do next. Everyone is not going to be a LeBron James. Everyone is not going to be a Michael Jordan. Everybody's not going to do what Charles Barkley and Chris Webber and Shaquille O'Neal and Kenny Smith and some of the other guys are doing now, you know, after basketball is all over. There's only so many spots for those jobs as well. So when the game is over, for a lot of players, you know, it's a scary sight. Because the question becomes now, what's next? For all of your life, you've always been chasing a certain level. You know, from maybe from elementary school to junior high school to high school. There's another level to chase, to college. You're saying that I might be good enough to get to the ultimate level. But once the ultimate level is over, as an athlete, there's nothing else left to chase. And if you haven't figured out what that path is going to look like after the game is over, then you're not prepared for the future. And a lot of guys are not prepared for that because they don't think that way. Because we believe that the game is going to go on forever. We believe that the game is never going to end. But at some point in time, when you're on that train and that train makes a stop and you see other guys get off because their time has run out, one day that's going to be you. And have you prepared to get off the train when it makes that stop for you to get off? A lot of guys haven't made that decision. I would like to see going forward, you know, that a lot of the professional sports teams or organizations employ people who have gone through this journey, you know, to help the young guys who come into the league transition one day out of basketball, you know, to employ people who have taken those steps before, who can pass on the knowledge and the information, you know, to help me get prepared, not at the end of my career, but in the middle of my career, of what my next step should be when the game is over.
It's deep stuff. Yeah. All right, we're going to do 4 quick fire questions
Okay. Before
we wrap it up here. The random question from our audience this week is the following. What is the weirdest thing you have seen in someone else's home?
Oh. Well, that's a very good question. I think I had a friend one day who had a pet monkey. And it was just kind of hanging out. And I thought it was maybe a toy or a doll. Until I kept looking at it and all of a sudden it started to move. I was like, wow, I haven't seen that before.
So he's just around the house?
He was just hanging out. He was sitting in the corner. I was like, why is that sitting up there? And all of a sudden it moved. I'm like, oh, that thing is real.
Okay, I'm happy that was the random question because I did not expect it to be a monkey. Okay, you've worked a ton with the youth. You've worked and played with the most successful individuals at the crafts. Whether it's the NBA, broadcasting industry, etc., based on your experience, what skills does a young professional need to have straight out of college?
I think, for me, the ability to communicate, but also have the mindset to be able to make adjustments. Because once you leave college, things are going to be different. You're going to encounter, you know, different people, different environment, different way of doing things. And can you adjust to all those things in front of you to stay on track?
Now, do you think there's a way to work on that, like actually apply that to your life if you're missing that piece or that skill?
I think communication is the key. You know, you have to seek out, you know, people and sit down and have a face-to-face conversation and talk with them. I think when you and I can sit across the table from one another, I get a true sense of exactly what you're saying to me. So I can better understand, you know, where you're coming from. So I can apply it to the things that I need to apply it to so that I can move forward.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. All right, so I also think this is a perfect question for you. What do you believe you have to sacrifice to become successful?
A lot. You have to be willing to give something within inside of yourself to make it better for someone else. And the question I've always asked, what are you willing to give up, you know, to make it better for you and somebody else? And there are certain things you have to sacrifice. And sometimes, you know, there are things that you love to do and some things that you hold on to so tightly. You know, you say, I just don't want to give this up. But at this point in time, it might be good for me, but it may not be good for somebody else. And when you're part of a group or a team or a family, you know, sometimes you have to be willing to give up certain things to make it better for somebody else.
So more specifically, what did you have to give up to become successful?
Lifestyle. I'll tell you a perfect story if I have time.
Oh, you do.
You know, one night I was in a game and I was playing behind an individual, and he was a very good player. And at that time, his backup had never outscored him in a game. And he wasn't coming back in. And it was easy for me to get one or two more baskets to be leading scorer. But I knew that if I become the leading scorer, the headlines would be about me. And most guys would take that headline. But I knew that I didn't want the headlines to be about me. I wanted it to be about that the team has won their 12th game in a row. So sacrificing having the chance to have my name in the newspaper the next day as the lead story, to me, I felt like at that time it's not the right thing for my team. So I said, I can't take any more shots. Even if I'm wide open, I got to pass the ball. Because the moment would have been good for me, but for the longevity of the season, me not outscoring him was the best thing for our team. So the next day when the reporters came in, the conversation wasn't about Trent Tucker. It was always about what the team did the night before. So sometimes you have to give up what you could achieve in satisfaction as an individual to make it better for the team.
Amen to that.
So now that as the season goes along, we're not talking about this. This is not the conversation that I wanted. Because I'm a team guy. I've always felt like that at some point in time, you know, that you're going to find your individual success based on the team's success. You're going to have a moment where you're asked to come in to play a certain role at a critical time. And if you're able to deliver during that time, that's when you achieve your individual success. But it doesn't overshadow what the team has accomplished. And that's the most important thing to me.
And you think that spans across all, like, careers, industries? Like, you think it's the same in business? Is it the same in broadcasting?
It can be. But it all depends on who the individuals are. And when I work with a new person for the first time or the second time, the main thing for me is to get to know them and how they function so that I can fit into what they do. I don't need to be the lead guy because I feel like I can fit in anywhere. You want to go this way? I can fit into it. I can follow where you're going. Most importantly, I need to make sure that we as a team, that we're together and that we're moving in the right direction. Because at the end of the day, it's always about the team that's going to do the job. I've always, you know, talked to my former employees when I worked in the Minneapolis Public Schools. And the one thing I tried to relate to them was that a good leader becomes a great leader when he can create and maintain a team that is greater than himself. Because at the end of the day, it's always about the team that's going to do the work. And for me to carry that mindset into any setting when you're dealing with a group of people, it's important to make sure that you give them the room that they need so they can function. When they function well, we all function well. It's never about one person. You know, one person can't do it by himself. It takes a team to make a business run. And I think the sooner that the leader understands that, the more that he's going to get from the people, you know, that works for him. Because now they don't see themselves as employees, they see themselves as being a part of the overall team success. and you're promoting them to achieve something greater than what they're doing today. You don't want to lose them because you love what they do and what they bring to your team. You know, but I've always felt that, you know, for any great leader, the one thing that you want to do when you have an organization is that you want to promote the people who are part of your group to achieve something greater than yourself.
I think that might tie into our last question big time. And it might just be the same thing. What is one life hack young professionals should apply to this very week that can help them become more successful?
Understanding, you know, the road they want to travel. You know, you have to carve out a plan, and you have to find the road that you want to navigate. And then understand all the things that look good and bad about the road you want to travel. And then you can find your way. You know what's coming, you know what's good, you know what's bad. And then you say, okay, how do I navigate around all these different things? If you don't have a plan, then you don't have a direction. And sometimes the plan may not work, but you still have a direction. And then you can figure out along the way, you know, what was good and what was bad. But if you have no plan at all, you have no direction. And I think a lot of people leave, young people leave college today. They think they know what they want to do, but they really haven't sat down to carve out that plan that they think is going to be right for them. And sometimes you just don't know as a young person what road you want to travel, but you have to give yourself some sort of guideline, you know, before you walk across that stage, you know, to achieve your college diploma.
So would you say this week, should they write out this guideline? Should they just think it through, write it out?
Write it out. And kind of, it's just like, you know, when you're playing against another player that you have never seen before, you got to go home back and do your homework. You got to write some things down about, you know, how should I defend this person in the first quarter compared to the third quarter? You know, how should I defend this guy with 2 minutes left in the ball game? So I've already kind of thought this thing out through the week. And now I'm starting to put this plan together so I can execute it, you know, when the game is on the line.
That's awesome. I think that is where we will wrap up.
Okay.
So thank you so much.
Thanks for
being
me
on the show. Yeah. It's an absolute honor.
Okay.
And it's been great. Everyone will get a lot out of this.
I hope so. Thanks. Okay.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us this week on Master the Start. I hope you loved that episode as much as I did. Make sure if you did, subscribe, like us, check us out on social media, go to our website. We'd love it all. We want you to become a part of our Master the Start family because you're very important to us. We love each and every one of you. Some reminders from this podcast before I let you go. Number one, as Trent stated, you must be ready for your lucky break. You never know when an opportunity will open up for you. So when it does, make sure you're ready. Number two, this is just an amazing quote from Trent. A leader becomes a great leader when he or she can create and maintain a team better than him or herself. That's valuable information, everyone. Number three, this week, create and write out a plan for your next 5 years. If you have no plan, you have no direction. You've already heard this a million times from other guests. Well, really, it's probably only like five. But seriously, you've heard it over and over in your life. Make sure this week is the week that you actually create a plan. It will help you become more successful. I guarantee it. So create a plan this week. Have a lovely 7 days. And we can't wait for you to join us next week with Stephen Adams on episode number 16. Have a great week, everyone. Bye.